Hello and welcome to the Daily Reprieve, where we provide SA speaker meetings, workshops, and conferences in podcast format. We are an ad-free podcast. If you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by going to donate.thedailyreprieve.com and drop a dollar or two into the virtual basket. Please consider donating monthly by clicking the Donate Monthly button. However, one-time donations are always welcome. Just click the Donate Now button. Now, without further ado, this episode of The Daily Reprieve.
Okay, yeah. I'm Brendan Sexaholic. Glad to be here. I don't know about all of you. I'm glad to be awake at this hour of the morning. It's like 7 o'clock in the morning here. I don't know where all of you are. Some of you will be in a similar time zone. And yeah, I'm just here again. Just there, I took the meditation, the moment of the meditation, and I use it for some prayer and to say, God, don't let this be about me. And that's, you know, one of the hardest things for me is to actually participate with others without needing to be seeking, you know, their validation. And my norm is to look for attention. I've been doing it all my life since I was a young child. I was always looking for attention. And I was getting it, you know, and I didn't mind how I got it. You know, if I had to be troublesome, I'd be troublesome. I couldn't sit still in school. I'd always be looking for attention and I'd always be getting it. I'd be getting kicked out of the class at 5 or 6 years of age. You know, they'd be putting me outside to wait for the headmaster to come around with a leather belt to hit you because, you know, sort of so that you'd stop looking for attention. It didn't work. It didn't work at all. You know, I was looking for attention and validation. What I used to hear all the time was, you know, why can't you be like other people? Why can't you just stop? Why do you have to be you? And step five, funnily enough, was a point that sort of set me free in a way from needing external validation. Now, at, you know, at 3, 4, 5 years of age, I don't believe that I had sort of done so much that I was trying to make up for some errors in my life or for defects or anything like that and trying to distract people. But I just wanted people to love me as I was and this and the other. And basically to allow me to be who I wanted to be. But that turned into, you know, a rebelliousness and there was a film made one time. It was called Up the Downstairs. And it was set in the Bronx, I think, in the New York. And this teacher was always, you know, he came in and all great intentions or whatever, but it was a really tough school. And this teacher, you know, found themselves in this situation is you do not want to be going up the downstairs when the bell goes and hundreds of students are racing in the opposite direction. And I would go looking for the downstairs to go up it. You know, I would look for the one-way street and I would drive up the one-way street. As a matter of fact, if you told me I couldn't do something, I would want to do it, even though there was no benefit to me whatsoever. I just had this, you know, urge just to sort of, you can't tell me what I can do. I had to. And it was almost like I was like on a mission to prove that, you know, it was fighting for the rights of the people. And it was insane at times. You know, there was a place where I was living where there was cliffs around the front of the, before the beach, above the beach, and they used to hang glide off it. And one time I drove past there in a taxi and they had put up ticker tape to section off the area where the people were doing the paragliding from. And I wanted to get out of the car and go and cut the ticker tape just to sort of say, this is public land. You can't close it off for your sort of thing. I was in the taxi going somewhere else, doing something else, but I had this feeling I wanted to go and I wanted to sort of, you know, I just couldn't stop, you know, I just couldn't stop. And so I attracted a lot of negative attention to myself. I was always out there at the front in some form or fashion, you know, leading and dragging along an audience with me. You know, I mean, I would sort of, I would get a group of people. I'd be in a foreign country at some meeting or whatever. And I'd have a group of people following me. We're heading out for the night. I had no idea where we were going. I wasn't stopping to ask them. They were following, you know, because it looked like I knew where I was going, but I didn't really know where I was going at all. And I don't know why this came to me, but I think it's sort of, you know, when I got to step five, I had written my step four. I was in recovery. I was in another program, and I was furious to get through this thing. I wasn't just wanting to get through. I was just like, if I don't get through this step four, you know, I'm going to die. I've got to get through this, and I've got to get a step five. And I was living in Latin America, and I came back to Ireland, and I had met somebody who had visited South America when I was there, and he had 33 years sobriety in that program. And I remember, you know, coming back to Ireland, and I really wanted to do my fourth step, but I hadn't it finished. And I drove up to where he lived. It was a couple of hours up to the north, and I went to see him, and I was like, I was desperate, you know, like, sort of, you know, I've got to get this fifth step done. If I don't do it now, and if I don't do it with him, and then I fly back to Latin America, like, sort of, what's going to happen? You know, I mean, I was really, 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 really concerned. And he stopped me, and he slowed me down, and he says, you know, like, Brendan, you know, the fifth step can sort of be done anywhere at any time. And he said there was a person he knew that had gone into a room on his own with his fourth step and had read it out. And he came out, and he said, well, you know, I went in there and I did it with God and someone else, because I'm not the same person who had done all those things. Now, I don't subscribe to that opinion. I think that I do need to sit down with somebody else, and I need to get it clear out, because I need the courage to share those things that I wanted to take to the grave with me with somebody else. But when I did that, and I shared them eventually, when I got to the situation, and I shared them with somebody, the sensation that I got was an incredible sense of relief. That I had been able to share this with somebody. And this person was unknown to me. He was a priest in a South Pacific island. You know, I was there at the time, and I had eventually written out everything, and I sat down and I read it out to him. And I sincerely expected to be chastised by him, and I was very happy to be doing it with somebody who I thought, I will never see this person again in my life. But what happened that day was, I the night before, I had written out my fourth step, and I had decided I'm going to go in there and I'm going to tell him the smallest things first of all, and I'm going to stretch it out, and then in the last 4 or 5 minutes, I'm going to drop all the big heavy stuff, and then I'm going to be gone out the door, and that's it. I'm gone, you know? And I wasn't planning on giving him much time to sort of to comment on it. But the night before, I went back and I looked at what I had, and I realized that I had to start with the biggest thing. The thing that I least wanted to share, I had to put that out first. And, you know, when I did that, then it was sort of downhill from there. And, you know, I like to say how it actually went on the day, because I was in Samoa, of all places. And as I walked down that morning to the church where I was to meet this priest, I was walking down the road, and just as before I arrived at the gates, it was actually the cathedral there, big, big white building. And just before I got to it, there's a band coming playing towards me, you know, and it's the Samoan police band. And, you know, they're these big Samoan, like, guys, you know, all rugby-sized players. And then the fellow with the big drum, and he's beating the drum, and they've got these, what look like British policemen's hats on. They're white hats, and they've got the fauna, which is like sort of like a kilt, and big sandals. And these guys are running around. And they're playing this song, Congratulations and Celebrations. It was like sort of, you know, from way back. And that kind of put me in the right tone for what I was going into. And I went in there, and, you know, when I got to the place where I was this priest was there. When I arrived in, he was actually there, and he had a large piece of wood in his hand, and he was threatening, if not actually hitting, a couple of young altar boys who had been caught stealing. And I'm thinking, man, like, this is not going to go well. What's going to happen to me when I tell him the stuff I have to tell him? But I sat down with him, and I told him all the things that I'd done, you know. And, you know, it says in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it says that when we've done this fully, like holding nothing back, we will be delighted. And I was holding nothing back. And I shared all this with him. And as I was coming close to finishing, he said, look, I'm going to have to go away. And he explained it was Holy Thursday. That's a Catholic celebration. Well, it's the Catholic. It's the, when I say a celebration, it's the a holy day for the Catholics. And it's, you know, before, it's on the Easter weekend. And it's the day before the Friday, which is, you know, the day like sort of that in for the Catholics, that, you know, Jesus is crucified. And so it's a holy day of obligation. And he'd been called out. He was to go to a girls' school, and he was to do a reading for them. And so when he was leaving, he said, look, you know, please do wait for me, because, you know, he wanted to speak as well. And I'd been speaking for, you know, an hour or two. And I said, yes, I said, I'm not actually finished. I actually have some more here, you know. But he went off, and he went off, and he came back about an hour later, and he came in, and he said, you know, he said, I just went to the school, and the children there had chosen the passage they wanted him to read. And it was the passage from the story of this young man who, you know, his father's very rich and whatever, and he demands from his father his share of the inheritance, and he goes off and he goes on a spree, and I'm sure there was alcohol and women and everything involved, until he's completely broke, and he ends up, you know, working for somebody with the tending the pigs, and his only food is what the pigs leave over. And this for a Jewish person would have been like the worst of everything. And he's there, and he's in this terrible situation. He says, you know, he's thinking to himself, look, I'd be better off if I was just a servant for my father. You know, they at least I'd get decent food and, you know, clothing and whatever. So he decides to go back home, and he heads back home. And when he's getting close to home, his father's standing on the balcony of the house, and he looks out and he sees his son coming, and he runs down, and he races up to his son, the story is told, the story of the prodigal son. And he runs up to his son, and he embraces him, and he says, oh, you know, it's just great that you're back, and is there this, that, whatever. And he calls on the servants to take him in and bathe him and dress him up in finery and prepare, you know, a big feast for the son. And I thought that when I'd been telling my story, I thought that I'd get emotional when I was telling these things that I had buried so far inside, and that just I couldn't look at myself and think of myself, you know, what would anybody think of me if I shared these things with them? And when he told me the story, that was when I started to cry, because up until that moment, I'm sitting, basically I've decided I'm going to do this. And I've prepared to do it, because I know that I have to get this away. I mean, I've been through the fourth step. I've got all this information. It's there, you know, and I've had to bring it up for myself, and it's there present for me. Now I want to get rid of it. And it was just that feeling of forgiveness. It was the feeling that I am not going to be ostracized forever, that I've told somebody and they haven't thrown me out of their space. And that was, thank you. And that was like, there's an effect, kind of a feeling. And I came out of there, and, you know, and it says we will be delighted, you know, when we've done this. And I was delighted, and I went up the road, and I was happy out. And I'm going down along the beach, you know, there's a beach beside me, and it's beautiful, and there's palm trees and whatever. And I come to a restaurant, and I went in, and I had lobster, and I sat there having my lobster, and anyway, and just thinking, whoa, But there was one thing that I hadn't been able to share. It wasn't the worst thing, but it was the thing that shamed me most. And I thought that nobody could ever look upon me as a man because of this. And I kept that to myself. It must have been a month or so later, or a couple of months later, I was in Hawaii, and I had gone and I had taken up a job there, and I found a sponsor quickly when I was there, as I always do, you know, whenever I'm in a place, I didn't know somebody, I'd get a local sponsor, as well as whatever sponsor I might have elsewhere. And I remember I gave him, I still had my fourth step, and I gave it to him to read, and he read through it, and he came back to me and he says, look, that's really, really complete. You know, he said that my sponsor sent me back three times to do mine, but he says, that's really complete. But the thing I was talking about wasn't in there. And I were walking with him on the beach, and we stopped at a hotel, and we were sitting in a foyer. There was nobody else around there. And I was sitting quite distance away from him, and I said, look, there's one thing that I haven't shared. And I shared it with him. And he said, yes, been there, done that, and I don't ever have to do it again. And I was free. And what it did was, first of all, it allowed me to become part of the human race. It allowed me to get rid of the things that were so deep inside me that if I shared them, you know, nobody would ever look at me the same again. That was gone. And, you know, it's my darkest secrets that will keep me separate from people. And, you know, it says in the 9-step promises, it says, you know, we will not regret the past or wish to close the door on it. Because I've done this, I am able to work with other people. And when people share with me their fourth step, if needs be, if it will be beneficial, I can share from mine. And when I go to meetings, I can share. And I can list out, you know, things that I'd rather not be talking to people about. But sometimes I can, you know, in our group in Ireland, they had a habit of sort of saying, you know, list out the behaviors, you know, that kept us in our disease. And I often would, at first I used to hate going into places where they do that. And then I realized in many cases, you know, people who were coming in who were going to do a first step, for instance, I could share in advance a list of behaviors of mine, which actually would make people feel like sort of, well, if he can share that, then I won't have a problem sharing from this. I'll just say, you know, one of the good things about the program, our program, is that first step. The first step is actually, it's a form of doing the fourth step early on. And I think that can be a very necessary process for many people and very beneficial. And when I did mine there again, there was people there, and one of them who had long-term sobriety sort of said, you know, what he said to me was, I was hurt to hear how much you hurt yourself, and you don't have to do it again. And again, I hadn't expected that. So, you know, doing this and this inventory process is a real responsibility if you're listening to somebody's fourth step. It's a big responsibility if you're giving your fourth step. But it is something that brings us in from the cold. I will say one thing, and that is, you know, in this
time,
you know, in the case, I won't say it this time. I'll leave it for another occasion. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Brendan.
I would like to thank you for listening to this episode of The Daily Reprieve, the best source for experience, strength, and hope for SA members. Please subscribe to this podcast to be alerted of new episodes. Please show your support by donating to The Daily Reprieve by going to donate.thedailyreprieve.com and choosing either monthly donations or a one-time donation by clicking Donate Now. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned for the next episode of The Daily Reprieve.